Welcome, everyone, to the Arterburn Radio Transmission. I'm Gardner Goldsmith, sitting in for Tony today. Looking at all you cool cats in the chat. It's great to see everybody. Jason. Tom. Hey. Tony, thank you so much, everybody. Tony's on the back end. Of course, Tony is traveling right now, and he helped me get all set up here. And we're going to be doing an hour of, hopefully, ART-level transmission. And right now, to open things up, I wanted to go with the chair is against the wall. But, of course, coming in from outside Tony's sphere, coming in with a little bit different music. This is actually a band called The Grassy Knoll. And I got into these guys when I worked at the Outer Limits up in Vancouver. It's actually pretty much just one guy. And he's from just outside of Atlanta, I believe. And a very interesting dude. And that's a song called Conversations with Julian Dexter. And I always thought there was some sort of great mystery about that. But it turns out it's just a friend of his named Julian Dexter. I'm Gardner Goldsmith. Good to have you here, everybody, on the Arterburn Radio Transmission. Remember, of course, this is Tony Arterburn's program. You can watch this program on Rockfin, America Unplugged channel. Tony's streaming capacity is amazing. And if you want to find him on Twitter, of course, look for Tony Arterburn, A-R-T-E-R-B-U-R-N, Tony Arterburn on Twitter. And of course, his business, Wise Wolf Gold and Silver Exchange. Wise Wolf Gold and Silver Exchange, he is the man when it comes to getting great precious metals and also checking out things regarding the crypto world. You can also see him and Kenzie doing their excellent Wise Wolf Gold and Crypto show. And America Unplugged, Tony is on with Don Jeffries and the great Billy the Kid, Billy Ray Valentine. And they have big plans coming up as well, working with Charlie Robinson and a few other folks on some terrific radio transmissions. So great to be here, everybody. If you're familiar with my work, I hope I haven't turned you away when I do the work for MRC TV. I'm a pretty radical free market voluntarist, and I sort of take libertarianism one step further and try to get to the roots of things philosophically. I've been teaching economics and philosophy for a while, and I did have a background in script writing. So sort of parlayed, I don't know how you can parlay script writing into politics and philosophy and economics, but I did when I got out of Los Angeles. And I was telling Tony before the program started, I'm very happy I'm not in Los Angeles. Got a story about California housing coming up in just a little while. And just to give you a quick overview of some of the things we're going to be covering, and I'll be checking in with the chat as well. And thank you so much, everybody. Tom, thank you. Good to be here. And thank you so much, Tom. Thanks for the positive word. I really appreciate that. And guys, of course, many of you I know from having done Tony's show before and being a guest with Tony and Don Jeffries. A lot of you guys populate the Rockfin chat. And thanks so much. I mean, this is a really great place to be. And you also populate oftentimes David Knight's program. So I've got a number of stories laid out. They're sort of like death cards. You know, they got the Ace of Spades. Lemmy's going to be hanging out. The Ace of Spades. Yeah, with Fast Eddie Clark. Remember those days? And then he formed Fastway. My friend Sean Naylor, he was such a fan of Fastway. Fast Eddie Clark, man. He was a Brit. He's a good guy, college guy. All right, so we have a lot to discuss while we have this hour together. I won't be singing Carol Burnett. It's so I'm so glad we had this time together, but I think you get the drift. I'll tell you about how to find my stuff a little bit later on. But I want to start with I want to discuss. All right, here's how I'm gonna sort of go through things. Let's talk a little bit about one of the first stories that I saw pop up. And that has to do with Mark Zuckerberg. I just want to get this out of the way. We've got a number of stories, and I'll show you. I'm going to hop over in StreamYard, everybody, so I can share my screen with you. And then I'll hop out of it. So you will be back in action here. Okay. So this is going to be one of my opening stories. And then I've got a number of other ones that we'll go into. We've got Leanna Wen saying that she's now admitting that masking her toddler has harmed his social development. And this coming from an absolute statist authoritarian who kept using the term policy when really the term is tyranny. Policy, government often uses that. Regulatory agencies use, oh, it's just a change of policy. It's a policy change. Oh, I see. So do I have a choice? No, you don't. You know, so the emperor has decided, but he's calling it policy. She's admitting now that the policies that she had pushed earlier have harmed her own child. When before she said, if you resisted those policies, well, you shouldn't be able to travel. You shouldn't be able to go to school. You shouldn't be able to go to work. You shouldn't be able to go to the store. Okay, Leanna. Thank you. I'm glad you care so much about children that you headed up Planned Parenthood, the eugenicist organization created by a eugenicist, Margaret Sanger, who is the lover of H.G. Wells, and of course, helped develop something to eradicate a particular racial group that she thought was inferior and should not reproduce very much. Okay, so we've got that story. We'll talk about that in a little bit. Also, another story. I heard David Knight speaking with Gerald Celente about the massive number of office spaces that are not being filled. And a lot of that, there's a mixture of that, obviously, as you guys know, has to do with the terrible state of the economy, inflation, the price spikes that are keep spiking up because of the inflated money supply. And of course, the supply chain problems adding to the price increases, supply chain problems created not by a pandemic, which is a misused term, and they kept changing over and over again until March of 2009, when they lowered the standard for lethality for a virus so that the H1N1 flu could be termed a pandemic when it really wasn't. The lethality level was not high enough to be termed a pandemic based on the original standards that they had. Also, we're going to go into the college loan situation with Joe Biden. And I want to bring you back into history a little bit to show you already what has been done regarding college loans and how the United States got into this position. And when you talk inflation, you can definitely see when you get an artificially fed demand by the government giving people below market rate loans to go to college, you're going to see price inflation in the schools. You'll see grade inflation. It's meaningless. The value of it, it's the quality of it goes down, while the price, in this case, grade, letter grades goes up, that sort of thing. And in this case, also, the cost for college goes up. You get people going to schools they should not be attending. And then they drop out. They have tons of loans they have to pay. And of course, the federal government now runs the loan system, loan sharking. So we're going to go into all that history. I sort of built up some material for this show in particular, and that's going to be one of the big areas of concentration. And then I also want to discuss just briefly, we'll start with this one. Florida Governor Ron DeSantis bans ESG agenda from state pension investments. Now, if you're familiar with the ESG, this is sort of the in physical therapy, they'll talk about the fascia in muscles, you know, that goes through the muscles and helps support them and so on. This is the fascia. This is the network and mindset behind so much, as most of you already know. This is the Klaus Schwabian Trilateral Commission, Tavistock Institute, BASIS, EU, NATO-esque, UN, World Health Organization, Deep State, CIA, name a zillion other organizations. This is part of their agenda, the ESG, Environmental Social Governance. So just want to read this to you quickly. And this is not to promote Ron DeSantis in any way. I am a free market anarchist voluntarist. I don't support any person for an office. when they do something that might help people get away from the state, then I will discuss it. I'll talk about policy. But anytime you're talking about policy under the political system, policy being a driver, being something driven by the polis, I believe that the polis is an immoral, illegitimate construct, because the only way that the polis can exist is by forcibly telling people to give it money and threatening them if they don't pay. That's the difference between a polis and a business. A business is voluntary. Now, where those two cross their lines is fascism and corporatism. And a little later, if we have enough time, I want to get into free markets and the so-called trade imbalance, which really doesn't exist. And I'll tell you about that, why in economics, it's always a balance of trade. I don't know if we'll have enough time for that, but I really wanted to get into that a little bit, because it's a great economics lesson. And it shows where the fine line starts to come, because you get political favoritism through the state. The state is always the source of the corporate problem. And that is a major portion of what we're running into now, whether it's the drug pharmaceutical companies working with a government agency like the FDA, or a government agency like the CDC, or a supranational agency like the World Health Organization, funded mostly by our money, even though Trump put a stop to it for about a year as he banned money going to the WHO. Here's the story from Florida's Governor DeSantis. He's banned the state pension funds from considering so-called environmental, social, and governance standards, known as ESG, when making investments for retirees. Okay, so again, it's a change in policy. Now, some people can say, well, how can he do that? They should be able to choose what they want to. Well, if they're voluntarily signing up for a job with the state, then he should be able to set the rules. Or the government should be able to set the rules. It doesn't mean that I think these jobs are good, or that necessarily coming in ex post facto is okay. Let's get into this a little further. DeSantis, who has frequently blasted businesses for engaging in woke politics, is chairman of Florida's three-member state board of administration, and has personally backed a resolution imposing the ban that was passed on Tuesday. The resolution directs fund managers to instead invest state resources in a way that prioritizes the highest return on investment without considering what DeSantis described as the ideological agenda of ESG guidelines. So this really opens things up to a much wider approach to this subject. What if some people want that? Again, this is the problem with the state. The state creates, as you probably have heard me mention on MRC TV videos, or filling in for David, or chatting with Tony, the state creates what's known as the tragedy of the commons. When something is not individually owned, when it's not privately owned, and everybody is called the owner of it, and in other words, it's public, where tax money is used on it, rather than private, where tax money is not used on it, and an individual owns it, and you're supposed to give someone property rights respect, just like you would respect their body and not aggress against their body. You respect what they use to feed their body and clothe their body, their wealth based on their property or their monetary wealth. You respect that as well, just as you respect their time and their life. It's all one thing. In this case, the tragedy of the commons makes it that everybody who is taxed thinks that they have a claim on how that thing should be used. So some people might want ESG guidelines. They might want the state to invest in what they think is a terrific idea regarding the environment. They're predicating it on what I think are erroneous assumptions regarding carbon and nitrogen and emissions. They're predicating it on data that has been massaged and manipulated, ranging from moving the temperature readers to areas in cities and on tarmacs of airports that are hotter, to not compensating for the fact that when the Soviet Union fell, the Siberian temperature readers were no longer funded because they didn't have the money, but they didn't change the overall outcome. So they were pulling colder temperatures out of their data sets, and they left the data sets and didn't compensate for that. So they looked relatively warmer starting in the 1990s. All of this stuff, you got Michael Mann in the hockey stick graph, where they started the graph they started the graph after the medieval warming period, which had higher temperatures. So you see Al Gore's film in An Inconvenient Truth, and it looks like it's very cool for a long time. And then suddenly, concurrent with the use of the internal combustion engine, you start seeing higher temperatures. Well, how strange. If you go back, you'll see that the medieval warming period, when, of course, the Vikings lived in Iceland and they had a non-government system called the Goddard system, just very similar to the Irish and their Brehon Law system that lasted over 1,000 years. They lived in Iceland because they could grow stuff there. And then they moved away when it started getting colder. They eliminated that from the hockey stick graph, which was started by Michael Mann. And that ties into the University of East Anglia and the ClimateGate scandal. If you ever want to look that stuff up, it's all out there. ClimateGate, ClimateGate 2, where they were able to release emails that showed people that these people have been communicating with each other on how to manipulate the data so that it actually came out and looked like what they wanted it to look like, because they weren't getting the results of fear-mongering heat that they had wanted. And by the way, if you ever get an opportunity, you can look up some of my old pieces at MRC TV. I'll see if I can find one for you, put it up on the screen before the end of the show if we can get to it. Al Gore's own film, Inconvenient Truth, where he has that giant graph and he has the big hydraulic lift that he stands on to show dramatic effects of temperatures rising so rapidly. If you actually focus in on that, he has two lines. I think it's red and blue. The red line is I can't remember. I think it's the red line is the temperature line and the blue line is the carbon dioxide line. I think that's it. And it goes, so your horizontal axis is your time axis and your vertical axis is the percentage, the concentration of CO2 or the temperature. You can read them both on that line. And what's interesting is if you actually zoom in on the graph, rather than CO2 going up first, temperature rises first over and over again. You can zoom in on almost any one of the spikes, any one of the changes, and you'll see there's like a 100 or 80 year lag. Temperature rises first, and then the CO2 concentrations come up based on isotope readings that they took from ice samples. And even there, how are you supposed to judge? And David Knight talks about this all the time. How are you actually supposed to judge temperatures being taken now, the temperatures that were taken in 1777 or 1820, right? You can't. The whole structure of it is ridiculous, but they have created ESG from this environmental social governance, and it is one of the fastest growing, there's trillions of dollars in this now being traded on the market, and massive businesses, almost all of them connected to banks like Goldman Sachs, things like that, they're all pushing this environmental social governance. And they're no longer thinking, I believe many of these people, they're no longer thinking about the customers. They're no longer thinking they have to cater to the customers. They're thinking they're creating a superstructure, a web, this fascia around the world that will be connected to the central banks, just like the states are connected to the federal government and they're dependent on the federal government. And they will do the bidding, except in this case, DeSantis has stood out and he was really pushed back. And that is one of the last vestiges of federalism that we're seeing here is the action of Florida. We saw little blips of this with things like marijuana decriminalization in certain states and things like that, prostitution in Nevada for many years, these sorts of things. The last dying breaths of federalism are being breathed now, coming out of Florida. And he's resisting the ESG. But generally what we're seeing is many corporations now are really tapping into the corporate ties to government, to the fascist side of the very governments that created their corporate status and gave them that protection against liability for the people who started the companies. So in this case, I just wanted to bring this up. The resolution directs funds to be instead invest state resources in a way that prioritizes highest return. Now, that is supposed to be the way it goes, but maybe some people don't want it. To me, that's a lesson about the state. to me, that's a lesson about everything that happens in the state, whether it's your schools and people are arguing about what's going on in the local schools, or it's the state deciding what's going on in the school systems. And by the way, you can look this one up too. Starting in the mid-1990s, state after state after state saw lawsuits against the states because they said they weren't doing, and you probably remember this in whatever state you're in, whether it's New Hampshire, New Jersey, Connecticut, Texas started this. In the mid-1990s, they had lawsuits saying that there was not an adequate education being provided by the states. In New Hampshire, it was called the Claremont 1 and 2 lawsuits. And it was all pushed by people connected with the National Teachers Union and the NEA. They actually had websites that offered people examples of how to bring these lawsuits so that the decision making would be centralized even further. To me, one of the biggest lessons that's coming around about this is the importance of decentralization, all the way down to individual autonomy to make your own decisions in the marketplace, away from these ties, whether they're corporate bank ties, they're corporate business ties, or they're corporate government ties. In other words, the federalism being tied in through the banking system and funds that the federal government would provide through grants and funding for things like welfare and Medicare and Medicaid and highways and things like that. Any of the government systems that have been created were created for political purposes to be able to bring in more attached sycophants on every level, whether it's corporate, whether it's education, whether it's state governments, anything like that. And then now they're taking it to that next level, which is what people like Zbigniew Brzezinski and others have been doing with the Trilateral Commission, going back to the Rockefellers, even back farther than that, to create the Tower of Babel that would oversee everything. So it is biblical, it is satanic, and it is anti-choice. And as I've discussed with friends, one of the major reasons I am a free market anarchist voluntarist is because people must have the capacity to operate their free will for, I think, two major reasons. One, the morality of it. It's immoral to tell somebody else how to act. Second, if you can't exercise your free will, you cannot save your own soul. Now, some people could say that even if you are imprisoned, even when you have a gun to your head, you still have free will. That is true. If you believe in an afterlife, if you believe in the soul, you operate for the soul and you let him shoot. That is probably the most drastic endpoint of that thought. However, I do believe that many people are not going to get to that point. Free will under the polis is coerced, it's managed, it's manipulated, and people are always under duress. Remember, sometimes they'll say something like, I signed this under duress. Well, you really could still make a choice, but it's a choice between life and death. It's many times, you know. So the second area where I look at that is free will for God. You got to be able to recognize and operate yourself and think for yourself. To be able to save your own soul, but also for the valuation of products. Nobody can tell you what to buy. Nobody can tell you how much to spend on it. Nobody can tell you not to buy something from someone if it is voluntary, because they are engaging in an aggressive act. They are threatening you. Those are the two major reasons why I'm opposed to the government. The secondary reason is, unless you can have free will to value something and make a free market exchange with someone, heck, even to devote a certain amount of time to what you want to do in your division of labor and say, I'm going to do this, you can do this, and we'll trade, whether it's barter or through money. Unless you can do that, then the market doesn't work, which is what we're seeing now in so many areas. So DeSantis, he made this choice. Pretty interesting choice. We'll move on. We want to leave it at that. Now I want to go over to Mark Zuckerberg. This will show you the corporatism and the weaselly way that I'm sure most of you are aware of this, but I deal with this probably on a weekly or monthly basis with the saturating way in which leftist postmodern Marxists have infiltrated social media in almost everyone except things like Gab And I don't go to Truth Social or Parler, but maybe them. And other things like Rockfin and Substack. Substack, very good. Rockfin, very good. Rumble, from what I hear, so far so good there. And Odyssey, also very good. So, oh, and Minds, very good. So what I think is pretty interesting is Zuckerberg was on with Joe Rogan. And at MRC TV, we are repeatedly hit by Facebook with all sorts of, oh, this information is incorrect. This information is false. Then there's this other thing called NewsGuard, which is sort of tied in. A lot of the people who work with NewsGuard are also attached to the Facebook so-called fact checkers. And they're all left-wingers, almost all of them, almost uniformly left-wing. And so I've spent almost entire weekends sometimes writing. I wrote one thing. It was like 3,500 words in reply to a climate change dispute that Microsoft's so-called fact checker, NewsGuard, when you get the little green check from them, and they will move you down in the algorithms for searches, or they'll flag you as being untrustworthy, that sort of thing, if you don't get the green check. And let me tell you, MRC TV has a team of attorneys making sure that they can stay on YouTube, that they can stay on Facebook, that they can not get hit by NewsGuard. So I've had so many hassles with these people. And this is a perfect example of it, not to just, you know, infuse my personal stuff into this. But here is the story from Information Liberation, which does great jobs, great job. Chris Minahan, awesome. Chris, if you're ever watching, thank you for doing this. And here's mine. It's right here. So Mark Zuckerberg tells Joe Rogan that Facebook algorithmically censored the Hunter Biden laptop story for 7 days based on general requests from the FBI. Now, what a lot of people are looking at here is that the FBI asked them to do this. Yes. Unbelievable, ridiculous. Or they're looking at it as a personality thing. Trump would have won the election and Biden wouldn't be in there and stuff. You know what? That's fine. If you want to concentrate on your guy and you think your guy is great and so on, I just remind you that all of the stuff that we are experiencing regarding the CDC controlling rents, regarding the jab mandates, regarding the lockdowns, regarding all these things, the vote by mail, Trump could have stopped all that stuff if he had stopped his dumb emergency. Trump did not comply with his sworn oath to abide by the U.S. Constitution when he, before the pandemic, started pushing for newfangled ways to get vaccines out there. Let me see if I can find this one for you. It was a presidential order, executive order 13887, modernizing influenza vaccines in the United States. Yes, indeedy. Here it is, September 19th, 2019, by the authority vested in me as, by the authority of me vested in me as president of the Constitution, by the Constitution and the laws of the United States of America, including such. So let me get this straight, Donald. You're saying that you have authority vested in you as president of the United States. You're ordering something, an executive order for something that is not a power of any branch of the federal government to create influenza vaccines, unless perhaps the United States government, the Congress, has declared war and the soldiers need said vaccines. But for the general population, not at war? No. I guess that nuance was lost on you, huh, Donald? I guess that's the way it was. Fix the hair, Don. Unbelievable. And gee, how odd that just shortly after that, we should get a pandemic, so-called. Yes, a pandemic with death rates. You can't get an R factor out of it because they're using tests that are bogus PCR tests. They're inflating the numbers, as Deborah Birx admitted in April of 2020 in the White House with her scarf up there on the podium saying, well, we're very lucky in the United States that if someone dies with COVID, we can count it as a death from COVID. Oh, I see. So you can lie. That's awesome. By the way, is your position constitutionally granted? Oh, it's not. That's right. By the way, did I sign the Constitution? Oh, I didn't. That's weird because it's being imposed on me. Yeah. See, that's an anarchist for you. Sorry. I don't know. Why do I have to abide by this? Did I say that I value this? It would be nice if you guys actually went by the rules that you promised you'd abide by, but you're not. That's awesome. That is totally great. So here's the Zuckmeister. By the way, just as a backup, I told Tony, I've got Camtasia, and I made a little video thing. I'll play it off my video thing. I'll go full screen on this, and hopefully the system won't break down. Here's the Zuckmeister. Check this out. This is so ridiculous. Let's see. Oh, here it is. Yeah.
How do you guys handle things when they're a big news item that's controversial? Like, there was a lot of attention on Twitter during the election because of the Hunter Biden laptop story. The New York Post.
Yeah, we have that too.
Yeah, so you guys censored that as well?
So we took a different path than Twitter. I mean, basically, the background here is the FBI, I think, basically came to us, some folks on our team, and was like, hey, just so you know, like, you should be on high alert. There was we thought that there was a lot of Russian propaganda in the 2016 election. We have it on notice that basically there's about to be.
Okay, so let's stop it right there. Now, he says, this just blows my mind. Let me go up here and show you the full screen here. I'm going to go 100%. No, actually, you know what I'll do? I'll detach Canvas. All right. And then I'm going to go full screen so you can see it better. I hope y'all can see it better. Okay. All right. So there's the Zuckmeister, right? So Zuckerberg says, well, yeah, basically, you know, we were told that there was a lot of Russian propaganda and so on and so forth. Really? Okay. So I'm going to backtrack just a little bit. Actually, let me do it this way for you guys. Backtrack short term. That so-called Russian interference and Russian propaganda, as you probably know, the Russian interference narrative and the FBI investigating all these ties with Donald Trump, that was based on a completely bogus Hillary Clinton-funded so-called dossier, the Steele dossier. Now, again, this is not to support Donald Trump. This is to discuss the perfidy of Mark Zuckerberg. He's either perfidious or he is sadly deluded and, in my opinion, quite naive, which I don't think he's naive based on the course that he ran to develop Facebook. I think he's not being genuine. Disingenuous, you might say. He's telling Joe Rogan that, well, the FBI came to us, and this is a combination of Zuckerberg and Trump. Well, the FBI came to us, and they said, oh, yeah, there's been this Russian interference. Oh, okay, really? You could have known at the time, if you actually looked into it, and you actually had any fact checkers who weren't left-leaning, and we'll tell you about those guys in a second, you could have looked into that, Zucks. You should have known by that time that the Russian interference working with Donald Trump stuff was completely bogus. The Steele dossier was bogus. And we knew it at the time. I was reporting on it at the time for MRC TV. Okay. And if you want to go back even farther than that, Zuckerberg, you'll also remember that the buys that the Russians were doing supposedly to influence the election turned out to be a few thousand dollars on your Facebook social media platform. That was basically it. And I don't even know if it was really the Russian government or just some people within the Russian government. I don't even know. So massive interference, no. Sorry, Hillary Zuckerberg, wasn't happening. Second, the narrative about Russia goes all the way back to 2008, 2009, and it has to do with the petrodollar. When Obama was president and they started with the American Recovery Act, and, you know, they spent millions of dollars to make those road signs that told you they were fixing the road thanks to the American Recovery Act. Yeah, like $6 million was spent on those signs. And then they weren't doing anything in the roads. They just spent the money in the signs. That was awesome. And of course, they're not supposed to be doing anything on the roads in the first place. Yeah. When they did all that and they spent trillions of dollars bailing out banks, you know, Goldman Sachs. Don't forget, folks, there was a senator, supposedly conservative senator from New Hampshire, Judd Gregg, who came out on Fox News in the fall of 2008 and was very upset that they hadn't passed the bailout. And he had said, well, we got to do this. These are people's retirement we're talking about. No word about inflation, about trillions of dollars being created out of thin air and how that would affect people's retirements when they were on fixed incomes. Nothing about that. Oh, no. Judd Gregg, supposed conservative Republican. Guess where he went to work after he left the Senate that next year? Goldman Sachs. Mm-hmm. Yes. Guess what bank got billions in their bailout? Yeah, Goldman Sachs. You got it. Yeah. And of course, we all know there hasn't been a Treasury Secretary who hasn't been connected to Goldman Sachs for something like going on like 35 years, something like that. So, yeah. Anyway, so once Russia saw this, the Russian government started to ceased buying long-term T-bills from the U.S. government, as did China, as did Brazil, India, a lot of other countries. So the United States responded partially by working off the Saudi Arabians, and that they did not want Russian energy exports coming out. And the Russians were working on a pipeline to go through Syria to get to Eastern Europe. And so the United States, as they shortly after they helped overthrow the government of Ukraine, because Ukraine was Gaddafi was going to start a gold-based African currency, they toppled in late 2013. They toppled the government of Ukraine. Did I say Syria? Yeah, Syria, Syria with the pipeline, Libya. So they were involved in all those places. They tried to overthrow the government of Syria by funding radical Islamic guys. And it wasn't working. So they toppled Ukraine. They tried to get all the way down to Crimea. That's when they portrayed Putin as being the bad guy for defending Crimea. And of course, from that point until just a year ago or so, the neo-Nazis with the Slobodan Party, Tiani Bach, their pictures, John McCain, Joe Biden with Tiani Bach, neo-Nazi, admitted neo-Nazi. With the Slobodan Party, they work with them. The phone call, Victoria Nuland, and I've gone through this before, on the phone with Jeffrey Pyatt in January 2014, deciding whom they were going to place in the leadership position in the government that they had just overthrown. After someone had been elected there in 2012, who was very close to the Russians and had made a special deal with the Russians. That's why Hunter Biden was put on the board of Burisma, because they wanted to block any deals between Burisma and the Russian government. It was all about Russian energy exports. And of course, then you've got the ethnic stuff with the ethnically Russian people being attacked by the Ukrainian forces and thousands being killed. So I don't support Russia. I don't support Ukraine. But that part of the argument that Vladimir Putin gave when he began the invasion of Ukraine was 100% verified correct. And I'm not going to say his decision was justified, but what he said was historically accurate. So Zuckerberg is talking about something that is completely tied into the DNC, not hack, but information leak of 2016. They blame that on the Russians. They gave it to CrowdStrike, which is tied with the Atlantic Council and NATO, total deep state. They didn't give the information to the FBI. They didn't let them see the hard drive. And of course, you see, oh, dead bodies. How strange. Seth Rich was going to speak with somebody. He's dead. That's weird. He used to work there. That's strange. You see these emails being released at WikiLeaks. You see the Podesta emails being released. And you see information coming out. If you look inside Hillary Clinton's emails, you'll see that she was communicating about the overthrow of Gaddafi. They were planning it. They want it. And she actually acknowledges in the emails, and I've read them, in the emails about how happy they'll be, about how happy the French president will be when they can overthrow Gaddafi. And we came, he saw, he died. Ha, ha, ha. Yeah, okay, Hillary. And we're going to go into something before we go from a video from Hillary as well. But this Zuckerberg thing, really is astounding, because at in the beginning of 2016, anybody who was aware of what had been happening with Ukraine and the narrative about how evil the Russians were, oh, the Russians are evil. They're attacking Crimea. It's like, no, what are you talking about? They're defending Crimea against the Ukrainians. You could see the way the narrative was being manipulated, the way it was being massaged. The Russians were the bad guys. March of 2016, Rob Portman, a senator from Ohio, Rhino Republican. And by the way, that's one of the reasons why Donald Trump imposed the tariffs against foreign made washing machines and dishwashers was to please Rob Portman, an Ohio washing machine and dishwasher manufacturers like Whirlpool. And as I've mentioned before, that backfired. There's a really good reason piece on that. Now, I do want to get into the balance of trade stuff. I think it's very interesting stuff. And then the total free marketeers, I think, need to keep in mind the corporate problem, which is one of the major problems that that I see out there. But Rob Portman and this guy, Chris Murphy, who's a Democrat, hardcore leftist Democrat senator from Connecticut, came up in 2016, March of 2016, with the Portman-Murphy Countering Foreign Propaganda Act. And it would shower over 2 years, $150 million on news, American news agencies that, as they claimed, countered the foreign propaganda, right? Well, it finally became part of the National Defense Authorization Act. That is the grab bag for all sorts of pork spending and very dangerous things, like the Obama with FISA and things like that. All sorts of terrible stuff, going after people just because they're whistleblowers. In this case, it was to fund friendly American news sources, because, of course, those dinosaur news sources were dying off. They opened up. It was put into NDAA. Obama signed it in December of 2016. All became law, so-called law, statute. And for 2 years, they operated from an office in the Pentagon, shelling out money to people. So this narrative about Russia was part of the push for the Countering Foreign Propaganda Act. It was all part of one thing. It all came together in the fall of 2016. As people started to look at Podesta, the Pizzagate stuff was coming out. Hillary's emails were coming out. Seth Rich was dead by that time. All of it came around. Oh, it's Russia. No. Don't look at what these guys are doing. Look at Russia. Russia's the evil one. And this is what Zuckerberg's doing. It's just unbelievable. More Zuck.
Some kind of dump of that's similar to that. So just be vigilant. So our protocol is different from Twitter's. What Twitter did is they said, you can't share this at all. We didn't do that. What we do is we have, if something is reported to us as potentially misinformation, important misinformation, we also have this third-party fact-checking program because we don't want to be deciding what's true and false.
Okay, so let's pause it right there. And we're going to minimize El Screeno and head over here real quick, because I'll give you a quick idea. See if I can call it up on my old stories for MRC TV. All right. Here it is. Facebook claims in legal documents that their fact checks are protected opinion. And this is only one facet of this story. So I wrote, 2021, December. Among the myriad frustrating things Facebook, now known as Meta Platforms, does, especially, it seems, to people who believe in liberty or at least are critical of big government, is to restrict the reach of our posts for long stretches or label false and then memory hole our posts when its team of so-called fact checkers claim that something is untrue. For some of us, we just grimace and bear it, trying to figure out ways to stay in touch with friends and to continue getting our posts seen, despite Facebook's wizards of ugh telling us that our reach will be limited. Curiously, this just happened to me today, and I'll be restricted even more than previously for the next 3 months. And I'm still, basically silenced. But thanks to a man who is not sitting back and taking it, I just learned something striking about Facebook's fact checks. In legal documents provided in a defamation suit brought by pro-liberty reporter John Stossel against Facebook Meta, Meta's legal team openly claims that their fact checks, so-called, merely are opinion. The American thinker's Thomas Lifson starts things off, and he says, quote, in a court filing responding to a lawsuit filed by John Stossel claiming that he was defamed by a fact check Facebook used to label a video by him as misleading, Meta's attorneys asserted that the fact check was an opinion, not an actual check of facts and declaration of facts. Under libel law, opinions are protected from liability for libel. Now, there is one other facet of this that I want to bring up. So, and it is here. In fact, FactBonk has long heralded, this is skipping around. In fact, FactBonk has long heralded its fact checker system, even as we users could see the leftist slant that indicated to us that there was something fishy going on. They applauded themselves for employing groups like the Poynter Institute to put out posts. Oh, great, it just jumped on me again. The Poynter Institute to put out posts under their fact-check microscopes. Yet, as John Stossel recently noted in one of his excellent videos on the subject, like all human organizations, Poynter's team has subjective people in it, and it doesn't exactly seem non-biased. He says, to do this fact-checking, Facebook partners with groups like these, fake.org, full fact, more, seen in his video, and all of them approved by something called the Poynter Institute. It calls itself a global leader in journalism that claims that it has a commitment to nonpartisanship and fairness, but they're hardly nonpartisan. Just look at their website. Their eagerness to honor left-leaning reporters such as Leslie Stahl and Katie Couric, and their push to decolonize the media and change language shows their leftist bias. Poynter once even apologized after it tried to blacklist conservative news sites. Yeah, I said, remember that? Corinne Weaver wrote about it for Newsbusters in May of 2019, including the fact that in that particular smear attack, Poynter utilized an asset at the ultra-left Southern Poverty Law Center to construct its unhinged narrative. Yeah. And by the way, here's says Poynter, which has started the International Fact-Checking Network, shared the new report and data set called UnNews, declaring at least 29 right-leaning news outlets and organizations to be unreliable news websites. Report author and SPLC producer Barrett Golding combined five major lists of websites marked unreliable. Remember when they did that? The result, which consisted of 515 names, included many prominent conservative sites, Breitbart, CNS News, Daily, that's a branch of MRC TV, Daily Signal, Daily Wire, Drudge, no longer conservative, Free Beacon, Judicial Watch, Life News, LifeSite News, LifeZet, Live Action News, the Media Research Center, that's the people for whom I work, PJ Media, Project Veritas, Red State, The Blaze, Twitchy, and Washington Examiner. Yeah. Isn't that wonderful? Unstinking believable. Now, I want to, yeah, while I've got time, I want to go into the student loan thing. I could do this story about Hillary Clinton and this new show that they're doing, Hillary Clinton and her daughter Chelsea, and they're calling it Gutsy. But I want to talk about Biden's forgiveness of these student loans. $10,000 student loans. There are indications, and many people have said that the forgiveness will actually not really help people who have gone to community colleges, and they'll help mostly wealthier people. To me, that's playing the class envy side of it. It's sort of similar to, I did a report for MRC TV a little while ago that discussed how major celebrities had their PPP, the Paycheck Protection Program loans from the CARES Act under Donald Trump, patently unconstitutional. They had them forgiven. And, you know, people like Kim Kardashian and Kanye West and Tom Brady, people like that. Nancy Pelosi's husband, Paul, it owns something like 8% of this one San Francisco based corporation that had their, you know, millions of dollars in PPP loans forgiven, just basically money given to them. And I think that, you know, that generates a certain amount of justifiable resentment on the part of people who see the favoritism. But it also generates and plays into the Marxist class envy stuff. In a way, I have to say Marx, the one area where Marx had a valid point was talking about the term bourgeoisie is a play from Burger, the royal governor and appointee who was the favorite of the royal governor as things were transitioning from the feudal system into the industrial age. There were a lot of holdovers who gained at the expense of their neighbors by being the old royal favorites and then using that to gain land and power, becoming royal governors or becoming big corporate masters or getting a lot of land and starting industrial projects. Marx's attack on those types of connections would have been fine if he had understood the problem, which is the state. But instead, he blamed free market capitalism, and he called that sort of connectivity between the state and these special favored people capitalism or free markets or markets when it has nothing. That is not capitalism. That's fascism, favoritism, corporatism. So that's what we saw with the PPP loans. In this way, it's the same thing with the college loans. And so I want to just mention that this is a long-term problem. And you can see here, I wrote a piece in 2017 where the Obama administration, I said, during the last 2 days of the Obama administration, Wall Street Journal investigative reporter Andrea Fuller shed some light on the situation. She exposed the fact that in the last week of President Obama's occupancy at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue, he saw his cronies at the Department of Education release word that, shocker, they had mistaken the enormity of student loans in default. Yeah, that's right. It turns out there was much more money that they owed. In fact, they had mistakenly not reported more than half of all student loans handled by the feds. The feds now are the only entity issuing U.S. student loans. They're not just in default, but students have not even paid $1 each on their loans in the last 7 years. And I said, how is this possible? How is it that after former President Dwight D. Eisenhower pushed the 1958 National Defense Education Act that handed college loans to let colleges in turn loan money to students, all in the name of so-called national defense, after all of that happened, and I want to run through this before we end the show. How is it that all this came about? Well, we go back to the end of World War II. Here it is. The GI Bill, 1944, with its college benefits for veterans, was the government's, and this comes from the website James G. Martin Center. The GI Bill 1944, with its college benefits for veterans, was the government's first move into direct assistance for students. That's widely known. But just what effect did it have? Not as much as most people probably think. Fewer than half of the vets used their benefits, and most of those who did use them not for college degrees, but instead for vocational training. GI benefits also spawned exactly the kind of scams, hoaxes, and overcharges that we hear so much about these days. Nothing new under the sun. When the government makes lots of money available, schemers will figure out ways of getting some. Now, from there, they thought it was such a brilliant idea. Now, let's just mention this. It's one thing if a person is forced into military service. It's another thing if a person volunteers under certain criteria. And I will refer you to David Crockett's great speech during his second term in Congress when he was a congressman from Tennessee. It occurred around 1830, and it's now called Not Yours to Give. And he explains that there is nothing in the Constitution to allow the government to hand out money for humanitarian reasons. And then what at that time they were debating was a bill to give extra money to the widows of veterans from previous wars in the United States. He said, look, they've been given everything they were promised. They came in with an agreement. We gave them what we told them we would give them. To do more beyond this is not in our agreement. And we are defrauding the taxpayers, and we are breaching the Constitution, handing these women humanitarian money, the widows of these veterans. This is what was done with the GI Bill. And it was a bad precedent. But of course, they did it. And it just blossomed from there. 1958, the National Defense Education Act handed colleges loans to let the colleges in turn loan money to students, all in the name of national defense. After the squeaky clean, Lyndon B. Johnson finagled the unconstitutional Higher Education Act of 1965 that started direct college loans, called Federal Family Education Loans, FFEL. And then Dick Nixon introduced Sallie Mae, the Federal Student Loan Marketing Association, to buy up student loans held by private banks. That inspired an even greater moral hazard of riskier loans being handed out by the banks. Of course, after the feds expanded student loans via Pell Grants in 1972, Jimmy Carter then signed the Middle Income Student Assistance Act of 1978. Then Ronald Reagan and a so-called bipartisan Congress increased the number of Pell Grants and pushed government payments to universities by more than 30%. Then George H.W. Bush signed into law the 1992 William B. Ford Direct Student Loan Program, part of the reauthorization of Johnson's 1965 Higher Education Act. And of course, George W. Bush exploded student loans in 2007, and he likened it to the GI Bill. Yeah. And there, I will post this. Here's what I'm going to do. And we're running up against the clock here, everybody. And thank you so much for being part of this program, Arterburn Radio Transmission. Please, by the way, if you're tuning in for the first time or you're listening to this later on rebroadcast, Wise Wolf Gold and Silver Exchange. Wise Wolf Gold and Silver Exchange. Wise Wolf Gold and Silver Exchange is great. Tony is fantastic. He's so patient and so kind, and he knows his stuff. I think it's a very key opportunity now to get hard metals to hold the value of your currency. With programs like this, just after the government passed its so-called Inflation Reduction Act, there's an oxymoron. Inflation reduction. The inflation's already occurred. The only way you can stop future inflation is to stop printing money. That is the inflation. The price spikes follow. They don't even know their terminology. But of course, this is the fourth turning. The Roman, what's the term? Sacclara. The Roman sacclara is coming. And I want everybody to be prepared. Follow Tony on Twitter, Tony Arterburn on Twitter. You can follow me. I'm at Guard Goldsmith. I'll post this article, which has almost all of it in there, and I'll post this other article about the history of the government involvement in college loans. And maybe over the weekend, I'll do a piece or a video about Zuckerberg, and because it's very in-depth. You can see the origami on that. So thanks so much for watching, everybody. Hey, definitely check out more of Tony's show. I'll leave you with this fine music. And I want to thank you once more for being part of the show. Arterburn Radio Transmission, signing off.
Life is a continuous confrontation with forks in the road. One is good, one is bad. And you could always wander completely off the road altogether and become lost. Totally and completely lost. If you take the wrong fork at one of these junctions, there is always the opportunity at the next fork to get back on track. But it is a constant battle within ourselves. You see, I have studied this concept for many, many years, and I have to tell you that if there is a real devil, like Flip Wilson used to say, the devil made me do it. Now, I'm not telling you that there's no such thing as Satan or Lucifer. I'm telling you this. If there really is a devil, that devil exists in the hearts and minds of men and nowhere else. Nowhere else. For if you take man out of the equation, evil ceases to exist. And there is left only the laws of the universe and the balance of nature. Put man in the equation, and before long, evil will rear its ugly head and present itself to the world. The evil is within man, and that is why it was called the fall. The devil never made anyone do it. If you do it, you did it yourself because you fell into temptation. For until man once again confronts the real nature of his own condition and of the world around him and accepts full responsibility for his actions without blaming anyone else or any devil, until then we will always be a puppet on the end of someone else's string. And ladies and gentlemen, when that someone pulls that string, we will dance.